the Ted and Jennifer Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, welcome to Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwin. The promise of hydrogen is the focus of our coverage this week. Hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe, and it's something of a holy grail when it comes to transportation. It offers a future in which we can use the clean, limitless gas and do away with polluting and finite fossil fuels, and automakers around the world are lining up at the forefront of this technology. They splash ads in glossy magazines promoting the coming age of hydrogen, and they paint a bright world. But this is also a world that's a long ways off. It'll take another 40, perhaps 50 years to figure out how to produce, store, and deliver hydrogen in clean, efficient, and economical ways. But as Living on Earth Cynthia Graber reports, One Nation says the time to start is now, and it's putting a lot of money and political capital into the promise of hydrogen. Here's her report.
Hi, we need to go to the president's residence.
To the president's... Pesestai.
Yes, exactly. I hop into a cab on a bitterly cold morning, but the chill is only part of why I'm shivering. I have to admit, I'm a bit nervous. I'm on my way to interview a president, something I've never done before. But the cabbie tells me not to worry.
He's good. He's a fair guy.
It's a 15-minute drive to the president's compound, a cluster of boxy white stone buildings surrounded by a windswept marsh.
A few minutes, the president will be ready in 5 minutes, something like that.
The president's assistant greets me at the door, and that's when it hits me. There are no guards here, no metal detectors, no security. Okay, maybe that's not so surprising. It's not the White House, after all. I'm here to interview the president of Iceland, an island in the North Atlantic about the size of Kentucky. A nation of 290,000 people out to teach the world a lesson.
So let's sit down here, if that's okay with you.
Let's see.
Can I offer you tea or coffee or water? Or...
Iceland's president, Ólafur Ragnar Grímsson, is a striking man. Tall, stately, and even early on a Saturday morning, impeccably dressed in a blue double-breasted suit. We sit in a room anchored by a huge weathered table, surrounded by books on Icelandic history. To really know this nation, he says, I must understand that the story of creation, the story of how God made the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh, well, it doesn't really apply here.
Because when it came to the creation of Iceland, the Almighty became so fascinated by the possibilities that the creation has continued in this country until this very day, with new mountains and new islands and new lava fields and earthquakes and geysers. And so any time you visit Iceland, you can actually bear witness to the creation.
Today, President Grímsson is witness to a new creation in Iceland. His country has pledged to wean itself off imported oil and switch to hydrogen fuel to run its cars, trucks, buses, and vast fishing fleet. It's an ambitious undertaking that could save Iceland millions of dollars a year and cut its greenhouse gas emissions nearly two-thirds. But President Grímsson says beyond the economics and the environment is a matter of national pride.
It might sound strange when I say it, but I believe that in the world we now live in, successful foreign policy has to be based not just on military or financial strength. It has to be based on your contribution to the evolution of the good society. And if you can make a meaningful contribution in such a way, your role in the world will be strengthened. We would not now be a formal partner of the United States together with big countries like Great Britain or Germany and Japan and so on, if it wasn't for the hydrogen project.
What's the role of the government in this hydrogen project?
Well, I think what the Icelanders have done, not only the government, but also the people, is to open our society up to becoming the testing ground, a kind of a laboratory for the hydrogen future.
The plan for Iceland's hydrogen economy was born in a small laboratory here at the University of Iceland in Reykjavik. The father is Bragi Arnason, a ruddy white-haired gentleman who's called Professor Hydrogen.
This is how the major energy system of the humankind might look in the future.
Arnason points to a light bulb representing the sun. It shines on a tiny solar panel that collects the energy used to break apart the bonds of hydrogen and oxygen in water. Off to the side, oxygen and hydrogen bubbles rise to the top of two glass tubes.
You simply split the water in its components.
Hydrogen is not a fuel itself. It's a carrier of energy, in this case carrying solar power to be released in a fuel cell. In fuel cells, hydrogen atoms are split into electrons and protons. A membrane blocks the electrons, but lets the protons pass into a chamber where they mix with oxygen to create water. But for these water molecules to be stable, they need the electrons that have been left on the other side of the membrane. And the flow of these electrons to the water molecules through a wire creates an electrical current. Here, it turns a small fan. The only waste from this reaction is water. Bragi Arnason tells me his tiny model is a showcase for the potential of hydrogen to transform the way we use energy. He says it's also a handy PR tool.
Well, I put it up 2-3 years ago. We used it to show reporters and maybe politicians when we need more money.
When Arnason started pushing his hydrogen economy in 1978, Iceland was phasing out coal in favor of hydropower from the nation's many rivers and geothermal power from the hot water and steam vents that dot this volcanic island. Arnason said these renewable sources could be tapped to provide hydrogen for the nation's vehicles. At first, his theories were met with a shrug. Good idea, people said, but kind of a pipe dream. Then, in the 1990s, breakthroughs in fuel cell technology made hydrogen a serious option. International companies looked to Iceland, with its cheap renewable energy and manageable infrastructure, as the perfect testing ground. They called Professor Hydrogen, and the island's power brokers took notice.
Once I met one minister on the streets downtown. You see, we are very small countries. Everybody knows each other. Then he said to me, there are some good things you are doing, because these big companies, they were not coming to Iceland just to drink coffee and chat. They must mean some real things, and that is of very great importance. If you are going to succeed with such a process, you need the industry with you, and you need the government, and we have both now.
The Consortium of Industry, Government, and Academia charged with implementing the hydrogen economy is called Icelandic New Energy. Jan Bjorn Skulason runs the enterprise. Skulason is a large, personable man with perfect English, an important skill in navigating the international interests involved in this project.
Okay.
He's driving me to a filling station on the outskirts of Reykjavik, where Iceland's transition to a hydrogen economy is underway.
As you can see, this is just a normal filling station. Here you can buy gasoline, diesel, whatever. And then you just, we added this hydrogen part, which is here.
Skulason parks at the far end of this full-service complex, past the car wash, the pumps, the convenience store, and the snack bar. He leads me to a large square area with walls of concrete and glass and panels explaining the hydrogen project in Icelandic and English. Inside, there's a large electrolyzer to split water into hydrogen and oxygen, a compressor, and a row of bright blue storage tanks. This facility is unusual for two reasons. It's the world's only hydrogen filling station open to the public, and the only one that runs entirely off clean, renewable energy.
This station is just connected to the normal water and electricity grid work in Reykjavik, like every other home.
And like every other fueling station in Iceland, it's self-serve. Skulason says the goal is to keep the new technology simple.
You just unplug this, you connect it to the car, and then you just push the green button and hydrogen starts going. This is just a standard dispenser, so if a car from Ford would drive up here today, we could fill it with this dispenser also, so...
Well, right now there are no hydrogen cars made by Ford or anyone else in Iceland. So far, it's just 3 city buses that fill up here. It's the first stage of a 5-stage operation. First, trial buses, then trial cars. The plan is to eventually replace all gasoline and diesel vehicles with hydrogen models, but don't hold your breath. Even the optimists here say it will take about 50 years to implement, in part because of one huge technical challenge.
How do we store sufficient amount of hydrogen if you need to have hundreds of cars driving through here on a daily basis to refuel?
What are the economics of it right now in terms of the buses?
To discuss economies is almost not relevant. The vehicles are 4 times more expensive than the normal vehicle. The filling station is much more expensive than a normal gasoline station, and the fuel is much more expensive than diesel fuel today. We are quite convinced that within a very short period of time, the fuel cost will go down, meaning that the same, that the equivalent amount of fuel will cost the same for untaxed hydrogen as taxed gasoline. And that means European prices. You in the US, of course, have almost free gasoline.
There goes a hydrogen bus.
There's another hydrogen bus, yeah. So actually, we think that's a very important issue that people keep in mind, that this is still a research and demonstration phase. Commercialization is still a few years away, so economies are not there yet.
As part of the research project, the hydrogen buses are thoroughly monitored and maintained at a garage just a few hundred feet away from the fueling station.
We begin by looking on the roof.
Skula-san leads me up a set of metal stairs to a small platform that looks down on the roof of a hydrogen bus.
On the top of the roof here, we have 9 cylinders with compressed hydrogen gas. Here you have 2 fuel cell units. Then you have fans to remove hot air from the fuel cells themselves and so on. But it's true. It's bulky, still a bulky system, but it's. I'm not afraid that we will not be able to compact this into a car in the future.
You have a lot of really unique, unique setup here in Iceland. You have an amazingly abundant supply of energy, and an incredible supply also of water. And it's a small country, and you don't need many fueling stations, and you don't have a problem with, you know, where to put the electrolysis. What do you think about that? I mean, what do you think when you hear that?
A lot of challenges worldwide. And, of course, though the government sees this as a beautiful picture of utilizing hydrogen instead of fossil fuels, I think we always have to keep in mind that we have not proven yet that this is the only solution. Because if it's not going to work in Iceland, I think there's even a lesser chance it will work in other locations.
Even in Iceland, a nation that can produce all the hydrogen it needs from renewable and non-polluting sources, there are enormous obstacles to a hydrogen economy. It's still expensive to produce from any source, even more expensive to manufacture vehicles that run on this gas. And, of course, the question of how to store it until it's ready to use, whether at the filling station, or on a bus, or in a car, just how to make fuel delivery efficient and economical, remains one of the biggest hurdles to opening the hydrogen highway.
In just a minute, we'll visit with the scientists and researchers of Iceland who are crunching the numbers and sputtering molecules of metals to unravel the elusive hydrogen storage mystery. And we'll meet the politicians who support them. Stay tuned to Living on Earth. Welcome back to Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curtwood, and you're listening to The Promise of Hydrogen. So far in our program, we've heard that Iceland is a country moving to become the first nation to say no to fossil fuels and use vehicles that burn hydrogen without polluting. It's a lofty goal, and many obstacles lie ahead, and perhaps the biggest is storage. You can store hydrogen as a liquid, but it takes too much energy right now to make that process efficient. You can also store hydrogen as a gas, but you'd need a huge tank to get the same range that today's cars get with gasoline. But there's another option, using blocks of metal to absorb, hold, and then release hydrogen when needed. They're called metal hydrides, and researchers in Iceland think they may be the answer to the storage dilemma. Living on Earth, Cynthia Graber continues her report on the promise of hydrogen. Svein Olafsson and Hannes Jonsson are a couple of problem solvers. Right now, they're figuring out how long it's going to take to set up the next experiment they'll conduct in their crowded underground lab here at the University of Iceland in Reykjavik. The answer, at least a few days. These two scientists are taking painstaking measures to find the best metal, or combination of metals, in which to store hydrogen molecules until they're ready to be turned into energy.
Okay, hydrogen metal storage is very simple, in a sense that you have a tank which is filled with metal hydride, and when you apply hydrogen pressure, that hydrogen goes into the metal, and at a certain temperature, there's an equilibrium pressure in the tank.
One can soak up hydrogen much like a sponge can soak up water, and then by heating it up, the hydrogen is released again.
This sounds simple enough, but applying the technology to make cars run is a challenge. Most metals that can store and release hydrogen are too heavy to use in automobiles. And lighter metals that could store hydrogen operate at temperatures too high to be practical. Usually, researchers looking for the perfect hydride heat large amounts of metals, mix them together, and hope this new metal combination will solve the weight and temperature conundrum. But Olafsson prefers to work on the molecular scale with a machine he calls the sputter chamber.
So the sample is in the centrum here, where we can use these shutters to open from the atomic rain of magnesium.
The sputterer is a large chrome cylinder with tubes and wires jutting out all over the place. Olafsson places samples of metals in the machine, then bombards them with gas. The gas chips away at the metals, breaking off molecules, which allows him to slowly layer them in the center chamber.
Typical run is maybe 15 minutes, so it means that we get, say, about 300 to 500 atomic layers of material.
Then Olafsson feeds hydrogen into the chamber and measures how much hydrogen the metal absorbs. He says there are benefits to working on this nanoscale.
And that allows me to make very special samples which you cannot get by mixing, say, kilos of metals and try to get new properties. With the method I am using, just thin film growth, I can make, say, mixture of magnesium in layers and try to get some new structures. And Hannes can then try to solve many things for me by his calculations.
One can ask questions like, if I want to improve the storage properties of a certain material, let's say magnesium, which elements should I add to it so as to make the hydrogen come out at a lower temperature and make it come out faster? And while, of course, these calculations are not perfect, they can help to predict and gain intuition into where to go. Another thing we can do, of course, with these calculations is to try to understand in more detail the results that Sveit gets from his experiment.
All the number crunching goes on in a room just a few doors down the hall. Hannes Jonsson takes me there. He's obviously proud of his little makeshift computer lab that's packed with rows of gray computers stacked neatly on metal shelves.
So this is a cluster of computers. It's about 130 of them here. And that way we get pretty good computational power. Still, the computers, they run for perhaps a week continuously, just doing one calculation.
Hannes Jonsson and Svein Olafsson have been collaborating for a couple of years now on metal hydride research. They lead two of four research groups working on hydrogen at the University of Iceland. They're far from a breakthrough, but Olafsson says he's looking forward to the day when metal hydrides can be built into the very structure of an automobile, and its fuel source, hydrogen, can be fed directly into the car's frame.
This is a possibility which has not been tried so far by the car companies. People usually think about hydride as just a tank, not as a part of the structural unit of the car.
So you have the metal as, if you're looking at research in metal, then the metal, as you're saying, could theoretically be part of the structure of the car.
Yeah.
And then when you are pumping, you're actually pumping into your car in general.
Yeah. And we can take this idea further and say, okay, the fuels will also be a part of the car.
Such a breakthrough would have an enormous impact on the world's auto industry and mean untold dollars for its creator. So as scientists and engineers get closer to developing a commercially viable hydrogen car, Hannes Jonsson says information does not always flow so freely in scientific circles.
There are some players that really, you know, play things sort of more secretively and don't want to disclose so much what they're doing. But we're doing this more as a research project and basic research project. So we share information and are in collaboration with many other groups. But when it comes to getting some research funds, yes, presumably there is some competition.
Sounds like it's an exciting area to be working in right now.
Yes, it's something very new and many open questions and many things to be done. I think the basic research being done here is going to be very valuable to help spawn off some sort of new high-tech companies. And man, there are going to be a lot of opportunities for innovation before the hydrogen economy really is in full place.
Those opportunities draw American students to the University of Iceland's various hydrogen projects. I met up with two of them, Luis Camargo and Bill Steer, in a small rectangular wooden building near the science lab that's called the Summer House. You can often find them here poring over their research until the early hours of the morning. It's hard work, and the pace can be excruciatingly slow. But as Steer and Camargo explain, there are benefits to being on the cutting edge of science.
It's really good for funding, right? I mean, there's a problem a lot of times with society that there's some problem, and it gets a lot of media for a little while, and so there's a lot of interest. And then, you know, after it's had its moment in the spotlight, it's gone. So the backing for funding sometimes only lasts as long as the public awareness, right? So it's, in that way, it's a good thing that it's, you know, it's something that everybody's on a lot of people's mind.
I worked in some companies in the past that the projects were a bit more controversial, such as genetically modified crops. But it's really nice to know that you can put yourself forth to something that pretty much everybody agrees is a good thing. So it's nice. It's definitely nice.
These students say they enjoy working on the hydrogen project and look forward to the contribution to society it may make. Oh, and there's other reasons why young Americans might enjoy spending time in Iceland.
My name is Siri Dalmar.
And my name is Laura.
Yes.
We are the hottest chicks on the place, you know.
It's 2 in the morning, but the night has just begun for patrons of Vegamot, one of Iceland's popular nightclubs, a place where people come to grind up against one another on the packed dance floor. Iceland has earned a reputation for its party scene, attracting travelers from around the world. And for a small island, Iceland exports more than its share of popular music through acts like Björk and Gus Gus. And there are Icelanders who are betting that their nation's next big export could be hydrogen.
I tend to look at it as one of the long-term investment in my portfolio.
Gunnar Orn Gunnarsson manages the new business venture fund, which provides seed money for startups in Iceland. He has about 70 companies in his portfolio, from biotech to fashion. He says he doesn't know if Iceland's hydrogen project will ever produce products or services for export, but he believes Iceland will be able to market its knowledge about hydrogen.
If we will be able to start up a real commercial society with hydrogen in the near future, hopefully, where we will have a big car fleet and we will have tank station and infrastructure and all those problems that will be related to this, that will mean that a lot of other cities around the globe, when they will start to think in this direction, they will maybe make a shortcut by coming to us and say, how did you do this?
Jan Bjorn Skulason, head of Icelandic New Energy, hopes Iceland will be able to answer that question, not just when it comes to cars and buses.
What we've done at the Reykjavik Harbour, this is one of the biggest harbours in Iceland, and one of the biggest user of fossil fuels in the country is the fishing fleet.
Skulason stands by a row of trawlers docked in the harbour. They range in size from a small blue vessel that might go out to sea for a few days to 300-ton trawlers that stay for weeks. Iceland's seafood is known the world over. The nation exports around 2 million tons a year, accounting for about 70% of its gross domestic product. But this fishing fleet runs on imported and expensive diesel fuel and is responsible for a third of the island's greenhouse gas emissions.
Fish is, of course, has been the groundwork for the economy of Iceland for a very long time. And that's one of the locations where we think we can apply hydrogen if you want to become a hydrogen society, is to have the fishing fleet running on clean energy carrier like hydrogen.
Iceland was the first country to discuss the need for converting its fishing fleet to running off hydrogen. Soon after, a number of maritime nations joined the effort. But it won't be easy. Skulason says hydrogen fuel cells for trawlers will have to overcome a whole new set of problems.
There's a lot of salt in the atmosphere, which is not very good for fuel cells. Boats don't come into harbor every day. And like buses and cars and vehicles and so on, they can go to the same refueling station every day. But ships are out at sea for a few days or up to many, many weeks.
Once again, the hydrogen problem comes down to storage. Storage in metal could work on big trawlers that can carry the load. Another option is to use large and powerful fuel cells, the kind used now at stationary locations. These operate at very high temperatures, but the extra heat could provide steam to power a ship's frozen fish storage. There's also talk of storing natural gas on trawlers and reforming it into hydrogen on board. Skulason hopes to have at least some of these solutions worked out so that in a few years he can put a hydrogen demonstration project on a trawler. He says Iceland is the perfect place for this research.
We don't build cars in Iceland. We don't build car engines or anything, but we build ships in Iceland. And we have a lot of knowledge about shipping and construction of ships. So we are quite convinced that the Icelandic know-how can be applied in the maritime application for hydrogen. and therefore that could be a technological development, even create jobs and know-how in Iceland, which could be valuable to other countries. But financing projects currently and overcoming technical obstacles is a challenge and which we are tackling at the moment.
Jæja, gott fólk. Ég vil þakka ykkur kærlega fyrir mætinguna hérna í dag eftir stutt samtal mitt við lögregluna. Þá bar okkur saman og hér var örugglega 35 manns.
A few blocks from the harbor, the office of Iceland's prime minister is the site of a protest against the war in Iraq. 80% of Iceland's citizens oppose the war, so their government's decision to back the U.S. is unpopular here. Another unpopular government decision involves its plans to build a huge dam in the middle of a pristine wilderness. The dam would power a new aluminum smelter. Iceland's metal industry emits a third of the nation's greenhouse gases. And because of its smelters, Iceland was granted an exemption to actually increase emissions over 1990 levels in exchange for its signature on the Kyoto Protocol. One vocal opponent of the smelter is the Iceland Nature Conservation Association. The group is also critical of the government's hydrogen project. Spokesperson Arni Finnsson calls it a diversion, a greenwashing tactic to make the government look like it's doing something about emissions from cars, boats, and smelters, when it's not encouraging the purchase of efficient vehicles, which could reduce emissions now. Finnsson says hydrogen cars are a good idea, but too far off.
We're talking of 20 years, maybe, 15, 20 years. And like your administration, you know, we can't put off, you know, actions to stop climate change by 10, 15, 20 years under the pretext that we're doing research and have good plans for hydrogen. That's impossible.
This criticism does not surprise President Olafur Ragnar Grimsson. He doesn't respond to the question of how his government might promote cleaner forms of transportation now. Instead, he looks ahead to the promise that hydrogen holds.
And I would ask the question, does or can the world afford to have the hydrogen project far into the future? Isn't it of great need, even pressing need, for the total global environment to have the hydrogen project as a viable option here and now, as quickly as possible?
President Grimsson admits he may not live to see this project completed. It could take 50 years, and it won't be a simple task. As we've heard throughout this story, even if it's possible to build a hydrogen economy here, in a country where it seems a natural fit, it will be a long and costly venture. But Hjalmar Arnason, a member of parliament who's played a major role in pushing the government to back the hydrogen project, tells me that Icelanders have a knack for overcoming technical challenges. They did it once before, weaning themselves off coal and tapping hydro and geothermal power to heat and light their homes and businesses. In the process, Iceland went from being one of the poorest to one of the richest nations in the world. Even though, Arnason says, some sacrifices had to be made along the way, like not disturbing the elves, ghosts, and other spirits that, according to Icelandic lore, lurk on the landscape.
There are roads, even here in the neighborhood of Reykjavik, comes in a straight line, and then all of a sudden it takes a U-turn around a small stone or a big stone, because the experience was when the constructors went there with all these big bulldozers and machines, they broke down repeatedly. So the conclusion was we have to respect the elves living in there. So I love this. That's a part of our culture, our history and heritage. We believed before we had the light and the electricity, you had to know that here in the north, 9 months, we have very dark months. So light from electricity is very important to us. But before we had that, it was this darkness. And in the darkness, all the creativity of imagination came, and we had all kind of ghosts, elves, and other creatures.
In Iceland, imagination can make roads curve, and it may help an entire nation say goodbye to oil and gas and find a way to fulfill the promise of hydrogen. Arnason says Iceland will show the world, in particular the United States, what is possible.
Two-thirds of our emission here in Iceland is from transportation and fishing. So that's where our sins are, basically. So that's why we want to attack those sins and implement this new technology in transportation and the fishing fleet, and by that reduce our emission down to 2/3. So that's a lot. And we will be the leading nation. As you in the States are in other fields, we will be in that. But you can then come up, follow up, be our guest.
For Living on Earth, I'm Cynthia Graber in Reykjavik, Iceland.
Our special, The Promise of Hydrogen, continues in just a minute with a look at how hydrogen could meet energy needs here in the United States. Keep listening to Living on Earth.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Noyce Foundation, dedicated to improving math and science instruction from kindergarten through grade 12. Ford, presenting the Escape Hybrid, whose full hybrid technology allows it to run on gas or electric power. Full hybrid technology details at fordvehicles.com. The Annenberg Fund for Excellence in Communications and Education. And the Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in individuals, their families, and their communities. On the web at wkkf.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.